Karen Brady, Vice Chairman, Baroness, plus television busybody on The Apprentice, Managing Director at Birmingham City at 23, Vice Chairman of West Ham for over a decade, regularly seen shaking her head next to Alan Sugar, plus author. But let's see what the book club thought of her 1994 book, Brady Plays the Blues, about her time at Birmingham City on this week's Football Book Club.
I like the way that she said he never touches a chip unless we've won.
That is a good scene, to be fair, when Barry Fry sells a pen.
This is twice as good as anything else that we've read this season.
She's like, I don't give a shit about horses. Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each week we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Thomas Hardy, more Jamie Vardy. Thanks, Jack Swindlehurst on Twitter for that one. You're not going to slag him off this week, Jack?
No, that was a good one. I like it. People enjoy me being mean to them.
Okay,
based
we'll see
on no evidence.
We'll see how that pans out over the series. I'm James Buck, and over the weeks we'll be reading classics such as Trevor Francis's One in a Million and Andrei Kanchelskis's Russian Winters. Ooh, ominous. But today we're reading Karen Brady's 1994 book, Brady Plays the Blues, and reading with me are Jack Bernhardt.
Hi.
Natasha Daniels.
Hello.
And James Bowgen.
Hello.
We all good?
Yeah.
Good.
That was a great hello. I like that.
Hello. Oh, mummy, you are a funny bunny.
Neil Redfern's kid, sorry. Never going to stop talking about that.
Cool. Well, I'll take that as all good. So, very different book this week. Got a very different book. Mm-hmm. Brady Plays the Blues. Sounds like a jazz album. I guess that's the point. I thought it'd be interesting to go behind the scenes at a club for once, because we haven't redone that so far. Everything we've done has been, we've done one manager, and then we've done players otherwise. And when I saw the cover, I knew this was the book for us. Because originally we were going to read, I thought, oh, Karen Brady would be good. We were going to read one of her novels. And then we saw this, I was like, beautiful. Tash, I know you're very keen on the cover. Can you explain it to us?
I'm so keen on the cover that I have bought the outfit that she is wearing.
Please explain the outfit, please.
When you say the outfit,
when I say the outfit, I mean the Birmingham City 1994 kit.
She's sat on a ball.
She is.
It's a banging kit.
She's sat on an Adidas ball, and she's got a very fetching blow dry in her hair. And a lovely fake tan, and she looks gorgeous, frankly.
I'm
finally glad to have a book on my shelf that I don't want to like burn after reading.
That'd make a good name for a film. Hold that thought. Yeah, it definitely looks nicer than like Andy Gray's cover. Even though he was wearing a similarly skimpy outfit on the front of his one. Also, maybe the most obscure book we've read on the show, because obviously we all know Karen Brady as the West Ham vice chair and from The Apprentice and everything. But before West Ham, her and David Gold and David Sullivan were at Birmingham. And the book is basically, it's like a blog, kind of, after they've just gone down to the second division or League One. Where she's got to deal with the finances, the tabloids, and a half-naked Barry Fry. And it's genuinely a very fun book. And here's a little teaser. Just to get you excited for it. When 23-year-old Karen Brady was appointed managing director of Birmingham City by its owner David Sullivan, it was hardly surprising there was uproar in the football boardrooms across the country. An attractive young woman running a multi-million pound football club? British football had never seen anything like it. But if the media reaction was entirely predictable, it was also entirely wrong, as her outspoken diary of the 94-95 season makes abundantly clear. And then, Jack, there was something else in the inlay that you noticed right at the bottom.
Yeah. It says, her perceptive insider's account of daily life at St. Andrews, with all of its boardroom battles and dressing room banter, which makes Second City Blues one of the most remarkable and revealing sports books ever written. What's going on there? They got the title wrong.
That really does set up a good book when you get the title of the book wrong the page afterwards. So that is something to get you in the mood for it.
Control F hadn't been invented in 1994.
Maybe.
Just couldn't find it all, you know?
Oh yeah, that sub-editor got fired. I mean, Karen Brady personally fired that guy.
And if you know the year Control F was invented, please get in touch. At Footy Book Club on Twitter. It will probably be, it won't be the most boring thing we've ever had on the show, so don't worry about that. Okay, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book. We'll be doing a dramatic reading, a quiz at the end, and a brand new feature called Moments in Time. Excited for that, guys?
Whoa.
Yeah. What I like time. I like moments.
Well,
yeah. You know,
what's not to like?
Jack, you're going to love this section, I think. I think you're really going to love that section. But first, let's see what Amazon's saying. The book has 5 stars from 7 reviews, including this one from someone called Jag, titled Incredible Book. Good so far. Which reads, superb book. Love the pics of Karen. What a hottie. Thanks, Jag.
Sorry.
Very insightful. Cheers, Jag. Really helpful.
Wait, sorry. Oh, can on. You just for pronunciation, can you make that clear that that's Jag, not Jack, okay?
It actually says Jack Bernhardt.
Oh, God, my early days on Amazon when I was a massive perv.
But we know what Jack thought of the book and its cover. But what did you all think of this week's book? Let's start with James.
I bloody loved it.
Whoa.
I flew through this thing. I mean, it is a short book, but I flew through it in a few hours. Just sat and got through it.
Good to bring that up, actually. 130 pages, my book, 137 pages.
Yep.
Barely a book, but I loved it for being short.
I wouldn't have been mad if it was longer. I really enjoyed it. Really.
Genuinely.
We don't often say that on the show.
No.
I wish Stephen Gerrard's 500-page book had another 600 pages.
Well, based on the cover and the title and everything about it, I was like, here we go. But
exactly.
Really, no, not at all.
A real pleasant surprise. Tash?
Yeah, you know that famous quote that she has when I think she asked David Sullivan to buy her Birmingham City so she could run it, and he said, you'll have to be twice as good as a man to do that. And she said, well, that's not difficult. I feel like she had the same approach to this book because this is twice as good as anything else that we've read this season.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Very nice connection. That is extremely good.
Unfortunately, we've rated everything far too high, so we can't.
14 out of 10.
I was going to say, yeah. Well, that's Tasha's score already in. Nice and subtle. Yeah, Jack, you liked it?
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely terrific. I think it's really good because, it's very short, which I think really works for it and really works for all of these books. They shouldn't really be more than 130 pages, to be honest. Nope. But also, I mean, it wasn't just that, you know, I think Karen Brady's a public figure, but it's also that we've never seen this side of football before.
Yeah, that's... Exactly. I think it's a really good thing to have got on the show for that.
Because I think often in these books, you know, you have like a manager going or you have a player being like, oh, up there, the boardroom, they have no idea what they're talking about. And it was really good to see someone actually like living the side of being in the boardroom. And like there are elements where she doesn't talk about football that often. And there are elements where she talks about other sides of the footballing world. But that's fascinating, genuinely.
Yeah.
But she still really cares, which is great.
Yeah, like when you see the efforts that they have to go to fill these coffers to play the players that are whinging about it, you kind of see it very differently, don't you?
I mean, it definitely seems a unique mess. It seems a hot mess, Birmingham City. Circa. Yeah. I know we're going to talk more about that later, but it really does. And she walks into it. But I don't know, some context. I read it in the bath listening to the new Lana Del Rey album, and it was basically exactly... I don't know if that makes me mucky for reading this book in the bath, given that. That makes me seem weirder.
Why is everyone reading these books in the bath?
I read it in the bath too.
It is perfect. It's basically perfect length for a book. Bath.
Yeah.
And for a book. Yeah. But yeah, I loved it. It was a bit...
Wait, sorry. When you say it was a perfect length, are we talking... Were you wrinkling by the end?
Yeah, but only slightly.
Okay, that's fair. So you know it's been a good book. You'd be like, wow, this is a good book, but you're not like a prune.
I judge all my books on the wrinkle scale, how wrinkly I am. And I was extremely wrinkly after reading Stephen Gerrard's book. I was in the bath for 6 months. But no, I loved it. It was like, I don't mean this in a sexist way, dangerous. It was like Bridget Jones meets the Wolf of Wall Street, a lot of it. The way she's wrote about things, the diary style obviously lends itself to the Bridget Jones thing, but she was she's very funny. Like, and the way she wrote about
she's
things.
She's very funny.
Really, really good.
I absolutely believe that she wrote this book as well.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the stuff when she talks about, like, she's talking about the business and stuff like that, but she also brings up, you know, her relationship with the press and also her relationship with Paul Pesky-Sledo and things. It did have those kind of Bridget Jones, Daniel vibes, like trying to manage her career and her love life all the way through it. And she'd write things like, which I imagine like Bridget Jones saying, like, it's not exactly in bed with Madonna, more like in bed with my dinner and things like that.
that was one of those lines where I was like, nah, you can sack that line off, to be honest.
But then, like, the next page, she's negotiating with Southend for managerial compensation. It's a great book. I really enjoyed it. And
that classic moment of Wolf of Wall Street where the exact same thing happened.
That is a good scene, to be fair, when Barry Fry sells a pen.
Okay. in this book, there is a 3-page section, and I'm not going to lie, I actually welled up when I was reading it, because a few years ago, I met Karen Brady, and she gave me some advice, and I could see where it came from in this book. And I honestly, I was so like emotional when I read it, because so I met her, I did this MBA startup thing a few years ago, and she was one of the patrons of it. And she came in and was talking to us. And if, you know, anyone listening has ever done an MBA, they will know that it's 98% men.
So MBA is Masters of Business, right?
Yeah.
First time you said, I thought you said NBA. And I thought, I don't know, basketball.
The National Basketball Association?
No, sadly not. But she came in and she was, you know, did her lovely speech to everyone.
Yeah.
And then she said, she came over and spoke to me. And I, at the time, was incredibly nervous. Oh my God, she's gorgeous, by the way. Like, flawless. And
Jack would agree.
And she was just giving me this advice about how if I was to go into business, and as you may know, I run my own business as well as doing all of this stuff. And she said, when you're running a business, you'll find as much internalized misogyny from women as you will from men. Mm-hmm. And no one had ever said that to me before. I just assumed it'd be knobhead men in the way, you know. And then I was reading this and I totally see where she was coming from. Mm. And she's absolutely right, by the way. That's exactly what's happened all the way through. You get lots of women who want to play in a man's way in the world. And she is very open about the fact that she doesn't want to play like that. She will be great at business and she will be a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a chapter in there that she talks about this, and there's just one paragraph in it that I really found resonated with me. And I feel like men and women would kind of learn from what she says. So she says, as a woman in a high profile position in a football club, you're stereotyped as much by the other women as the men. Either you have to be completely and utterly feminine and play the role of a glamorpus, or you have to be a strident feminist who talks about everything from a woman's point of view. And both extremes lead to the same amount of nonsense. It undermines your intellect and isolates women as curiosities. I get fed up of being asked to speak as a woman. Let me speak as a business person. And I just, like, it's a bit deep for what we normally talk about. But honestly, I have read every business book. I've been to so many talks and nobody ever tells you this. And it's so true. And I was reading it. I was like, oh my God, I love this woman so much.
Yeah.
And it's,
where was that in Paddy Kenny's book?
But I find it on a very, very, very micro scale. I've told people that I'm on a football podcast and they go, well, that's really cute. They get a girl on. And I'm like, hang on.
It is
like,
cute of us.
I don't think enough. Yeah, people don't say that.
We don't give
ourselves
credit for it. Yeah.
But I just thought, wow, like, can you imagine how much shit she actually got at the time? And her take on it is this, like, she's so positive about it. And she's like, fuck you, I'm going to do it anyway. I just thought it was amazing. And also, she pulls my favorite trick in this book as well. She's about to be asked to do something really awkward, and she tells them that she's got period pain.
That was a good.
I didn't work.
Also, I found something out about her while I was researching today.
Please.
Did you know she's the chairman of Kerrang magazine?
What?
That's cool.
It says that in this book somewhere, I think, doesn't it?
Does it?
What? Does it?
Maybe it's a Wikipedia. I read it somewhere. I was like, oh.
You've accidentally bought, I can't think of any band on Kerrang. You've accidentally bought the My Chemical Romance. You've actually bought the My Chemical Romance annual of, the annual 2005.
You could see James' brain just ticking wildly there going, oh, Hooba Stank.
But they all, like, yeah, Gerard Way going, thank you so much to Karen Brady. If it wasn't for you. That is really interesting.
Quite cool.
That's so really combines,
interesting. She combines, and also I bet heavy metal is probably, you know, as kind of a misogynistic kind of world as well.
Yeah, I feel like she just sort of picks these battlefields and doesn't bow down. And I just think I think it's really cool.
That's great.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you mentioned the football thing, like the terraces and stuff, especially at the time. Must have been. Oh, about like going into that kind of world.
There's that famous line that she says in there when someone got on the bus when she first started at Birmingham and they said, I can see your tits from here. And she said, when I sell you to crew, you won't be able to see them from there, will you? And I just, yeah. like, I love that attitude of dealing with kind of misogyny and sexism in the workplace. I think it's amazing. And when you think of just how much shit she must have gone through, it's so, this book is just so great to read from. I think that just added an extra level for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She takes no shit. She pulls no punches at all. And you have to admire the way she just goes, I'm just getting on with this and getting things done.
Yeah, because bear in mind, like, she's 24.
That was what I was going to say. She's so young.
She's 24. She's so young. And she gets given this job, she works her way to the job, at 24, looking after, running a football team.
She doesn't just get the job. She persuades her boss to buy a football club when she's 23 years old.
Like, yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I couldn't get my boss to buy me a coffee when I was 23. Like, this woman is amazing. Love her.
I reckon I would fall down if I was 20. When I was 23, I wouldn't be able to say that line to the crew, the person in that crew.
Yeah.
No way.
Like, I wouldn't. I just couldn't get the words out of my mouth. I'd just be going, well, your tits are going to be in crew, aren't they?
That's just one of those things that you think of afterwards.
Definitely. And I wouldn't think of it until I was 35. reading this was genuinely, mind blowing for that reason, because she's so like insightful in that area, and she's so young. It's remarkable.
I think her way of dealing with like this stuff and taking no shit would be impressive if she was a 50-year-old bloke. I really think it would, because she's so cutting. Mm. But yeah, when you add those extra layers on, I just think, wow, this woman is a boss.
It's
I think
true.
Especially also with like how immature all the people when she gets to Birmingham and throughout, they're just like rascals, aren't they? They're little kids. Yeah. And she's just like, for God's sake.
Yeah. It's true.
She's like the most mature person in the room, and she's the youngest person there. It's very, very weird. Tash, were you disappointed that the advice that she gave you in person was then used in her book? Were you a bit like, that's a rip-off?
I was a little bit, because I was like, hang on. I thought I was going to gain some extra wisdom here. Yeah. You know, I'm about to start, like, you know, maybe start raising some money for my business. That I thought, God, I'm going to come out of this book and I'm going to be like Karen herself. But no, she just doubled down on what she already told me. Lazy.
Yeah,
bit.
Unbelievable.
Always trying to sell something. That's what she's doing. Smart.
We love you, Karen. Sorry, just a little bit.
But let's get into the football side of things. Birmingham have just been relegated to the equivalent of League One, second division. Big club like that shouldn't be down there. David Sullivan and David Gold come in and buy from the mucky papers. They come in and buy the club and try and turn it round. Birmingham, that not the place.
I love how she. How she persuades David Gold to buy, and there's a quote in it where he actually says to her, I'm dead set against this, but if you really want to, then I'll spend £8 million of my money doing it. Like, I was like, what? Doesn't even want to do it.
Guilting someone into it, like, fine, I'll spend £8 million doing it.
He wanted to buy a race course, didn't he?
Yeah.
Imagine
I don't give a shit about horses. Why don't I do that?
She says, because I've written it down because it was going to be my out of context, but she says, Dave was still talking of racing. I couldn't see the challenge myself. Clip clop, once a week.
That is
absolutely brilliant.
Wait, is that talking about the buying Spurs or buying...
they did try and buy Spurs, didn't they?
Yeah, and they couldn't afford
it. And then Alan Sugar beat them or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that been what did Nick Hewer off The Apprentice buy? Do you think like they're all buying? He bought like Plymouth. Yeah.
But when they arrived at Birmingham, it was just complete chaos. And actually, you think you're surprised that they actually end up buying this chapter when she describes how the club is when she gets there. She said she'd never even been in the city of Birmingham, never mind the club, and it was complete chaos. There was no structure. There was no staff roles, really, or any idea of what the accounts were. She says that the actual place was physically falling apart. Nothing was maintained or painted or anything. But then they still bought it. I think they saw it as a good opportunity, as a good project. But just some of the way she was describing the club, it's just falling to bits.
Yeah.
Doesn't she call it, she says it's like a Thai toilet at one point.
The lowest insult you can give.
If you look at the caption on the photos,
She does.
She describes it as a tight toilet.
She says the building was like designed by an alcoholic on acid, which seems like such a weird thing. You're like
a blind alcoholic.
Blind alcoholic on acid. You're like,
get the blind bit.
Too many descriptive words. Yeah.
She gets interviewed by the local paper, doesn't she? And they're like, "Oh, bet you wish you'd bought Villa," and she just kicks them out and won't answer any more questions. Love it.
That's true.
It's strange. But I mean, some of the stuff that's going on as well, not just the actual physical place falling apart, but the players were giving them a runaround as well. There's one bit, I think it's really early on, where an unnamed player he basically swindles the club by getting them to put a clause in his contract where they'd agreed to pay for a hotel for him to stay in until he sells his house, but he didn't actually have a house to sell. So he just lived in a hotel for free for like 9 months.
He hadn't started building it yet.
No, he didn't even build it.
They had to wait until he built this house.
But it's pretty so clever weird. As well. Like, they didn't check that. They were just like, they just assumed that he had a house that was on the market. He was like, I know what I'll do. I'll build a house and then sell it and I'll just stay in the hotel. Like, ridiculous.
I bet you that was Gary Neville. Building his barn.
Yeah. I'm having a nightmare with Bury Council. They won't let me do anything.
But I mean, even some of the stuff as well, where the previous regime, and basically they had no money, there's no cash flow, they had to trade things for or barter for things.
Bartering,
they couldn't afford to buy it. So like
so
there was
funny.
A bit where they couldn't afford mass bin bags. So they swapped an executive box at the stadium for a year's supply of bin bags. And the same with a Hoover. They were considering giving a Hoover company advertising boards in exchange for a Hoover. It's ridiculous.
For one Hoover. For one single Hoover. They were like, yeah, you can advertise here. That's just mad.
It is mad. It was really, 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 really strange. Imagine that nowadays, getting a box at Birmingham. They'd be worth what? Yeah. Good few grand for a Hoover that costs about 20 quid. I mean, I know
James hasn't bought a Hoover in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, what can one Hoover cost? $20? R.I.P. Jessica Walter.
R.I.P. Jessica Walter.
From how she described it, she revamped the whole club. Like, in the first week, she basically fired everyone. She was like cleaning everything, rearranging herself. And all I could think of when I was reading that bit was that montage of Mrs. Doubtfire when she's cleaning the house and listening to Aerosmith. Just like a montage of her just cleaning the club up.
I mean,
she like turned it around by herself in a week.
Fits with the Kerrang side, listening to Aerosmith. That kind of goes quite well. That's true. She does that in the first job, but the first week. But also, there's a segment on page 31 where she says, "The first job was to change the strip back to Birmingham's traditional blue and white. Then I went down to London to see Arsenal's vice chairman, David Dean, for some advice on how to run a football club." I love the way the first thing is change the kit back. And then it's like, right, probably better figure out how to do this chairman stuff.
That is exactly the order I would do it in as well.
Yeah, it's true.
They said it had like bits of orange and green in there because it was
Indian owners. Yeah,
which
before.
It's so weird where you'd be like, oh, let's make it look like Indian.
That's
sure,
a kit.
Cool,
that's
fine.
A kit I would love to see. The Birmingham City, Indian
it
Birmingham City.
It sounds quite nice.
Yeah, it sounds quite cool, right? Yeah. I bet hipsters would be all over that now.
Yeah.
It sounds the most stressful place to work ever.
If you believe in serendipity, though, as I do, then you could say that all of this is just the universe bringing her and Paul together.
Okay. Paul. Okay.
Because if it was a...
All right, Tash. All right, there we go.
If it was a well-run club, they wouldn't have spent this much time together.
That's
but he was having to queue
a good
up,
point.
You know?
That is a good point.
That is exactly that's where the meet cute would be in the rom-com.
Exactly.
She
in
would
the
be
cute.
There. I mean, it's very much a Hallmark movie in that sense, where she's like, she's
true.
This big bad like executive who's like trying to run Birmingham City Football Club, and there's this cute player who is there who teaches her that, you know, life's a bit more fun. You gotta have to just go out there and have fun sometimes.
You can't just do what she does all the time, which, as she says, is just go back to the hotel and eat steak and chips in bed. Every time she eats steak and chips, she's gonna have a heart attack. This woman. How much they can, and then David Sullivan literally does the same and does get a heart blockage. Like don't eat meat, kids. Anyway,
that bit where she talks about David Sullivan. You know, when he's very sad, but when he's got his heart condition, and she's like, I just didn't get it. He doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, and I was thinking, it's probably the stress of running a football club. But then a few pages later, she's like, his diet was basically chocolate cake, and I was like, oh. Now it makes sense.
I like the way that she said he never touches a chip unless we've won. And they were winning quite a lot. So he ate chips.
They were trying
constantly.
To get promotion. Yeah.
Tash, I know, as you mentioned, you're very fond of the pictures in this book. Do you want to give us our first picture section of the series?
Well, it's brilliant, but it's very disjointed, the picture section of this book.
Very
There's
much
no,
so.
There's no, like, pictures of them when they're kids or anything like that we get in the other books. Mm. It's very much just of this year. So you really get a snapshot into 1994 aesthetics.
Mm.
The first picture is beautiful. It is our Karen wearing just a shirt, and it's got that sort of Vaseline old RuPaul's Drag Race lens,
yeah, season one.
90s Olan Mills photo vibe going on, you know, a bit hazy. And the caption is that Manchester Evening News called me a bimbo, but I knew what the score was. And I just love that she's paired it with this photo of her looking very sultry with no trousers on into the camera.
It's very 90s, that, isn't it? To wear a shirt and no trousers. Like, sorry, I just forgot my trousers.
Yeah. It makes me think of like a promo shot for Friends. Like, I can see Jennifer Aniston doing this. That's the,
they'd wear trousers in a promo shot for Friends. Come on. Yeah.
I don't know. Phoebe wouldn't. But my favourite photo of the lot, actually, is the one where she is stood over some sort of balcony, and she's got David Gold on one side, and then on the other side is her husband, Paul, with the worst facial hair this side of Craig David.
Yes.
It is awful. He looks like if David Brent was in another level. It's terrible. So bad.
Sorry, Paul, that is true. But you look very nice on the wedding day, where Barry Fry.
But the wedding day, they look. He was the best man.
Barry Fry, the best man. Incredible.
Yeah. And also, can I just give a special mention to the picture where she looks like she's just, like, had someone hit murdered? Where she's walking across the pitch like she's in The Sopranos, and she's flanked by her heavies, the management team. She's got like a floor-length coat and leather gloves, and she looks like she just fucked someone up.
And also because she's covering her face, so it looks like a sort of Al Capone thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is incredible how it's just Karen Brady, Karen Brady, Karen Brady. Picture of Steve Claridge, Karen Brady, Karen Brady. All the way
and she also has a very gratuitous shot of her husband looking very hunky playing football, which I think is just in there just for her own, like...
Yeah. You've got to have one hunky pool photo.
Exactly.
And there'll be more Karen Brady after the break.
Hello. Hello there. What voice do you want me to do? We will do a little bit. I'll just do my voice.
Do your voice.
Yeah, thanks.
Hello. I'm Joe Marler. People think I hate people, but I don't. I actually love interaction with people. I love finding out what jobs they do and whether I could do what they do. The Joe Marler Show.
Joe Marler Show.
With new episodes every Wednesday.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we're reading Karen Brady's Brady Plays the Blues from 1994, where she's managing Birmingham City, and there's one man we have to mention, the one, the only... Barry Fry.
Big Barry Fry.
Big buzzer.
I both love and hate Barry Fry in this book, because I feel like that's sort of similar to how Karen feels about Barry Fry in this book as well.
Yes.
Like, I mean, you have to remember that Karen is at this point 24 and Barry Fry is
50 odd.
I don't know. How old he is. But he acts like he is like 15, genuinely, throughout this book. He is a big man child, and she is
his mum in this book.
She is basically his mum. It's so weird. Like, they, you know, she'll say things like basically they're this very weird double act. Like, they are a sitcom couple. You know, King of Queens. It feels like King of Queens, except instead of them being married, she's his mum. It's vastly confusing.
I'd watch that sitcom. Kevin James playing Barry Fry.
Barry Fry. She will say logical things like, we don't have much money. Please don't spend £100,000 on club ties. And he'll go, yeah. Don't worry. We're not going to do that. And then cut to him stuffing club ties into his back, you know, back pocket. Going like, yeah, look at all these I got. It's fantastic. He has this thing where, and she points it out. He loves to please people. So he will basically say to people, whatever people want to hear, he'll say it to them. So Karen will say, hey, we should weigh all the players. And Barry goes, yeah, sure. And then the next day we'll like throw all the weights out of the all the scales out of the club, like burn them in a big fire.
Because in fairness, they're probably very old scales. They're probably one of the inherited 18th century scales.
They were designed by a blind alcoholic on the acid. But he's very weird because he's both trying to please people when he's face to face with them, but also like incredibly rude about them in the press. So like in the press, he'll be talking, like they'll say, hey, this player did well, are you happy about that? And Barry Fry will say, oh yeah, I'm happy he played really well because David Sullivan hates him. And it just shows you how much more about football I know than him, because he wouldn't know a goal line from a close line, which is a very bad line from Barry Fry. But it's just odd because he then will like go up to people and see them afterwards and not really have it out with them. He instead seems to like pretend like he hasn't been saying all this mean stuff to them in the press. And that drives Karen, understandably, mad, because it would. This person slagging her off in the press constantly.
He's incredibly old school football manager. He's that kind of Redknapp kind of style, like go to the media about things and then worry about the consequences later. And that's why he's so entertaining. Everyone loves Barry Fry. He is fun, and he gets that. I can imagine it probably is torment working with him as Karen Brady. But he is, I mean, hey, look, he's unorthodox, but he gets results. And he does. He takes them back
up. He was her best man, so it can't be that.
Yeah, exactly. I bet he's great. He must be great fun, Barry Fry. He, of all the people in football.
I can imagine him like ruddy cheeked at the bar in the club, like buying the rounds.
And Karen being like, I'm going to go home early. I didn't say
we can leave the company credit card behind the bar.
Yeah, it's fine. My favorite Barry, I was going to say Barry White story, but that's a very different book.
Please.
Tell
us your story.
Barry, it was just after the one that James was telling about, the housing scam, which is one of the most remarkable stories ever, where Karen is saying, don't do the housing scam to this player. Like, stop, you know, ripping the club off with your illicit housing, a bit of criminal activity, one would really say. And the player says something like, oh, is this personal? Do you not like me? And she goes, no, what are you doing? I don't. The only reason I don't like you is because you are currently committing a housing scam against the club. and then Barry like leaps in and goes, actually, you're right. It is personal because between you and me, everyone thinks you're fucking shit, mate. And the player like breaks down, is like sobbing, is like, oh my god, what is happening? And Karen has to be like, no, we don't give you shit, we just don't want you to commit crimes against the club.
But then she says at the end of that chat, she goes, retrospectively, Barry actually handled it pretty well. She says,
I genuinely want to know
what
did Barry do after that point that made him handle it well, because at the time he handles it very, very, very badly.
That's true. He's
so odd. Well, he definitely uses her as a stick to beat the players with. So he'll be like, you know, you and me, we're pals. We like, you know,
good
we
cop, see bad how it, cop.
Yeah.
But Karen, you know, Karen doesn't want to pay you more money, or Karen thinks you're fat. Karen thinks you should cross more balls into the box. But I think you're great, you know, taking defenders on.
To be honest, maybe it's a good tactic in football to keep the center of the board. And like I say, it works. They won the league that year. They got the prestigious auto glass windscreen trophy.
But maybe that's why when we read these books, they're always like, God, the board are such wankers.
Yeah.
Maybe they're all using this tactic. I'm sure.
He definitely ran after that player, didn't he, outside, and was like, she made me say all that. I don't think any of that's
true. I think your housing scam's great, mate. Keep doing it.
I personally think it's brilliant, but the regime don't like it, mate.
That's back to Barry Fry. I think it's time for this week's dramatic reading. Can someone cue the dramatic music, please?
Cue dramatic music.
This story is called Naked Barry Fry Makes Jose Dominguez Cry. Good title.
That sounds like a haiku, nearly.
Yeah,
like,
it might work. It might work.
Naked Barry Fry makes Jose Dominguez. No, you know what? It doesn't.
Just a nice poem. That Sunday, we played Peterborough at St. Andrews, and for the first time, we went down to the director's room after the match, exhilarated and optimistic. At last, Barry and the team were producing the sort of results that made First Division football next season seem a distinct possibility. As we smiled and celebrated, Barry appeared on the television screen for a brief touchline interview with the central match crew. The interviewer drew particular attention to the performance of Jose Dominguez. Our Portuguese winger, delighted that we finally got mention of Spurs legend Jose Dominguez on the podcast. Very tiny man. Great prospect for the future, eh, Barry? Yeah, he was wonderful, said Barry. Particularly as Barry Fry nearly got the sack for buying him because David Sullivan thought he was absolutely useless. Anyway, gotta go. Bye. We all stood there astonished.
That is weird for many reasons, because he first of all refers to himself in the third person very casually.
That's true.
As if that's a normal thing. Like, oh, Barry Fry nearly got the sack. Very odd. And then just goes like, okay, bye.
We all stood there astonished, and all David could say was, that's a bit strong, isn't it? Who knows what Jose Dominguez was saying. She ran out, says, get Barry Fry out. I said to an apprentice, tell him I want a word with him urgently. I was steaming mad. Barry came through the door, and this is when it picks up. And to my great surprise, he was almost nude. Barry stood there.
I want to know more about what almost nude means at this point, really.
Oh, well,
I feel like luckily for you, it's a crucial qualifier.
The next line, Barry stood there in a tiny towel that just about protected his modesty. That nude enough for you?
Oh,
how I can't imagine how small
very
that
saucy.
Towel have to
it's
be.
It's very Sunday sport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, imagine teasing him with a towel.
I'm wearing a tiny towel that protects my modesty. My name's Barry Fry.
Barry stood there shivering and dripping, wet, fresh from the shower. He looked a very comical sight, but I was too angry for jokes at the time. What the F is going on? I raged. Why was it necessary for you to say that? Because it's true, he replied. No, it's not, I said. Then he talks about Jose Dominguez for a long time. David might have thought he was limited at first, but as you know, he still thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread, blah, blah, blah. How do you think Jose must feel now? He's played the game of his life, and he's sitting in there thinking the owner feels he's absolutely useless. He's the only one who's lost. No one wins by you saying this, and it's got to stop. I'm furious about this. I'm furious at the pair of you. All the way through, Barry nodded and said, yeah, right. I can see your point. There we go.
That is classic Barry's like, Barry.
You know what? I did offend Jose Dominguez, and
classic
I'm sorry.
Naked Barry. I'm pretty sure Karen Brady shouting at you while you're naked is definitely a search on a doggy.
I think that's a kink for sure.
Yeah,
it's definitely
surely.
Something Jag was after. He was hoping
Jag. Say Jag.
J A Bernhardt. What I like, and we've kind of mentioned it, is how absolutely nothing phases her, no matter how mucky it is. And there's a lot of mucky stuff that has followed her in her career. Because as you mentioned, she started her career at Saatchi & Saatchi. Then she went to go work with David Sullivan and David Gold after a really clever way of selling advertising for them with LBC, I think it was. Mm. And they were like, we need to get this woman in to run Birmingham City. So they brought her in.
She sold them £2 million worth of advertising in a year when she was 19.
Very, very
That's
smart.
Mad. Absolutely mad. And she it wasn't even for a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, exactly. I swapped that £2 million for what have we got hanging around. From selling all this advertising, she gets taken on by David Sullivan and David Gold, who obviously run the Sunday Sport, or I think it's the Daily Sport as it was known then, but equally mucky in those days as well. And I am delighted to hear the Daily Sports offices were just as grim as I imagined them to be. This was the key thing I picked up. Here we go. I drove to Eagle Wharf Road and thought twice about even getting out the car. There was this rundown warehouse in the middle of an industrial estate and this fire door with a sign that said Sunday Sport and a picture of a girl with the biggest tits I'd ever seen. Apparently, this was Tina Small, whose chest was 55E. I walked into the office. It should have been condemned years ago. The place was open plan and the typewriters were 10 years old, the kind you had to bang away at with half the keys missing. People were spread
all
over the place.
That sounds like a horrible euphemism as well. Yeah. Get Tina Small banging away at the old typewriter. Awful. Absolutely awful.
I walked in, hi, I'm Karen Brady, the new sales and marketing person. Oh, well, you can start by making the tea. Classic Daily Sport. Exactly how I imagined it. Program.
But that line came full circle because that's what she said about Andy Gray when he got done for talking about her. She said, I'm surprised they didn't ask me to make the tea.
That's true.
When she said that tea line, because she just walks into places and she's so efficient, I expected her to be like, anyway, the next day, because she said she made 500 cups of tea, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I was expecting her to say, so the next day, I developed a Wallace and Gromit style machine with 100 cups of tea a minute, so I could do other things. But she didn't.
But she did get working. She said, like, I'm not just going to be here to make your tea. That's the classic Karen comes in, takes it all down, sorts herself up. But it's not just that, like, nothing fake. Like, the way she says, talks about all the kind of sexual stuff at the sport.
So much awful stuff.
There's a lot of stuff with it, but like it just doesn't fit. It's just water off a duck's back. One of her jobs, as we mentioned, is to sell the advertising space, and she has to go through all this stuff. And she's like, I don't really care. I fail to see why anyone even bothered to listen to these sex lines, let alone get offended or turned on by them. Hi, my name is Sandra, and I'm lying on my bed now, and if you keep listening, I'm going to be telling you what I'm doing. Then 10 minutes of that drivel later, I'm wearing my 90. The only thing it offended was your intelligence. It wouldn't shock a 12-year-old. The only thing I can ever remember rejecting was stuff that mentioned urinating on people. So she does have a line where she cuts it off there, but just nothing for this. She's a bit like Mary Poppins in some way. She just gets on with the job, cleans everything up, and kind of goes, well, fine. If that's what you want to concern yourself with, great. But I'm not going to be listening to this, and I'm going to have a little song as I move on and do that. And there's a bit...
Mary even Poppins by, or Mrs. Doubtfire. Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, sorry, Mrs. Doubtfire. Yeah. That's true. But she does all these things. And then the other thing I thought it tied into quite nicely, where all these jobs, and it all seems to be moving. It's not just moving towards her job at Birmingham City that she's kind of on the trail to. I thought a lot of things she does in there leading up to her role on The Apprentice these days, because there's so many things in this that reminded me of Apprentice tasks. When she first gets to Birmingham City, one of the first jobs she has to do is rearrange the club shop. Like, she goes there and straight away, you can imagine Alan Sugar going, right, I've dropped you here in Birmingham. What you got to do is you got to put the shirts over there, put all these things. And it's just those little things. And then there's another bit later on where she says she had to rearrange like a stool of borsan, the garlic butter. Yeah, she had to go into supermarkets and rearrange the borsan so that borsan was more prominent on all these shelves.
That's so weird working at Saatchi & Saatchi. Well, like one day you're working for Margaret Thatcher on the Conservative campaign in the 80s, and the next day it's like, can you move some borsan for us? Just move it so it's closer to the tills so people buy it.
Yeah, and she does a really good job on it, and then they tell her off because she did too good of a job on it.
That's how she got the job. How do you think she got the... Now, you know, 20 years later, she's now supervising people doing those kind of things on The Apprentice. So, you know, it's all worked out well. Everything in her career, working with Barry Fry, stacking borsan, it's all come back and it's all paid off for her in the end. So at the end, Birmingham go up. It's very successful. Barry Fry, the gamble pays off. He does deliver results. They get the club kind of running quite well, and they get promoted. And they win a trophy. They win the Auto Windscreen Shield, I think it's called. Is that right? Auto Windscreen Shield?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Auto
The hell was the Anglo-Italian Cup? I'd never heard of that before.
Oh, that was a tournament where lower league teams played lower league Italian teams in the cup.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. I think I vaguely remember it and thinking it was nonsense.
You'll see in honours sections on a lot of clubs' Wikipedia pages and things. I think Chelmsford have played in it once. That's one of their like famous, the only famous things that happened in Chelmsford's history, I'm pretty sure. did we think it reached a satisfying conclusion? Did you enjoy the book?
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yes,
I think that was the impression I got.
It wasn't so much like a play. I'm not sure I could tell you exactly how they went up, but I feel like I know a lot of the bones that went into it rather than the muscle, you know?
It was much less football-y than a lot of the books we've done so far, but also not. And, you know, it just focused on a very different part of the season. It wasn't a list of loads of matches and stuff like that. And it was a bit like, remember when Tom Fordyce came on and he said how you can write a book about the whole, your career and stuff like that, or you can hone in on one individual element of things. And this was a really fun perspective from that. And I really enjoyed it.
I feel like it also weirdly gave me quite a lot of insight into Karen Brady currently with David Moyes, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Because I feel like there's quite a lot of this book where she's like, okay, hands up, we got it wrong, or we made a mistake here, or you know what, you can just like, I'm not going to have an ego about this. Let's start again. Or, you know, Barry, you can do whatever you want. I was wrong in that case. And that kind of gave me an insight into how they've, you know, because David Moyes obviously was sacked and has come back, and now West Ham are doing amazingly. And I feel like that's the kind of, you know, being the bigger person that you kind of need to run a football club. You can't have an ego about these things. And she seemed to push that through. And again, she is so young.
Yeah.
Ah, God. It's so, it's baffling. It baffles my brain. I can't understand it.
Maybe the youngest person. It's probably the shortest book we've done, definitely. And also, I think she probably is the youngest author of all the books we've done. Scores, James?
9.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I enjoyed it. I'll give it a... I'm going to be a little bit harsher just because I think you're going to go very high. I'm going to go 7. I really enjoyed it, but bit fleeting. God, I got into it and it was a bit moorish. I wanted more.
Should have been longer. That's criticism.
They talked about Spurs. She even said Spurs was such a...
Too big a club for her. That's what she said.
Club or something. Yeah.
That's true.
Wow.
I knew that already before I read the book. Jack?
I'm going to give it an 8. I really liked it. And she was mean about Peterborough.
Oh my God. That's something
she
forgot
hates
to mention.
Peterborough.
She really hates Peterborough. She says
she really hates an irrational hatred of Peterborough. I haven't been to Peterborough, but I felt bad on behalf of Peterborough.
So you're defending the Peterborians?
Yeah. There's a bit where she says to David Sullivan, like David Sullivan says, oh, should we buy Peterborough? And she goes, David, tell me where Peterborough is on a map. And David goes, okay, we won't buy Peterborough.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. No one. I know where Peterborough is. Somewhere outside London.
Purgatory.
It's on the way. It's one of the stops. First stop outside London on the way to York on the train.
It's near Cambridge.
Yeah, yeah.
York and Cambridge are quite far apart.
On the train to York. Yeah. On the way to York. Yeah, it's the first stop outside London.
It's in the region of England.
And finally, Tash, it all hinges on you. What score are you giving it?
Oh, I'm going to give it an 8. But I was going to give it a 9, but okay, she recycled my tips, so down to an 8.
Took it out. Come up with something new, Karen. That was 32 overall, so that's 8. 8. It goes straight to the top of the board. It goes above Cammy and Ozil with 7.5, and that is our new best. Who would have thought that a book we picked because it had a funny front cover turns out to be one of the best books we've ever read in our life?
Always judge a book by its cover.
Who'd have thought I'd have been given the highest rating out of all of us ever?
Yeah, I know. You've changed, man. You've changed. Yeah. You've changed.
Oh, this is like in Strictly when the first 10 gets turned around, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So for the quiz this week, you're all named after things that were hanging around at Birmingham City when they arrived. Jack, you're an old-fashioned stadium. Tash, you're a grotty drinks cabinet. And James, you're Steve Claridge. So, question 1. What item of clothing is Karen Brady alarmed by when she watches a training session and one of the players is wearing this?
Oh, an old grotty... No, a stadium, an out-of-fashioned stadium. Whatever I am.
Old-fashioned stadium, I'll give you it.
Old-fashioned stadium. And because it blows my mind... One of the players at training was wearing an overcoat.
Yeah, that's correct. She has to go up to Barry and say, what are you doing wearing an overcoat, these guys? He's like, let me get on with it.
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. Next day, they go in all wearing M&S overcoats. Remark, how do you play football in an overcoat?
I'm imagining that...
Do you think that was one of the times when one of the players was like, I'm too sick, I'm going to send in my 3 kids and put them in?
Or maybe she's just remembering something from the Sunday Sport. Like, she could be getting 2 stories
confused.
Sounds
more like LARPing if they all have big coats on.
Question 2. What was the fine for poaching Barry Fry from Southend?
Oh, an old-fashioned stadium.
Yep.
Was it £130,000?
Yeah, old-fashioned stadium. That's very impressive. That is correct.
Because she said it would buy you a mid-range defender in 1993.
And you know exactly what that mean cost is.
And now in my head, I was like, that's not £130,000.
Well, of course, it's £130,000. Yeah. Well, question 3. What T-shirt did Paul Tate reveal after scoring the winning goal in the auto windscreen shield?
Oh, old-fashioned stadium.
Please.
I'm sorry. Oh. Shit on Villa.
Shit on the Villa is what it says. Yes, but I'll give you that. Very rude. Very rude.
And she was so angry.
She'd draw the line at that as well. She would draw on the line at shitting on the Villa.
Yeah.
And finally, the book is called Brady Plays the Blues, but is this a chapter title or a blues track? There's 3 points to play for here, so you can pull it back. A trip to the Orient.
Drinks cabinet. That's real.
I'll give you that. What do you mean? Chapter title or... Jazz
chapter
track.
Title.
Is correct. Very good. This isn't real book, fake book. B, Minnie the Moocher.
Oh, the whatever, I stadium.
I didn't, who said that first? I didn't hear.
Stadium.
What did James say?
I said, Steve Clarence, that's fake.
Yeah, James got in there first, I think. I heard James. Sorry, Jack.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, again, I would say that we're not playing real book, fake book, so it's not.
It is a jazz track. It's a very good point. It's a jazz track, but I'll give it to James. Man hungry soccer boss ate my hamster.
I love that track. That, yep.
Ella Fitzgerald track is correct. Yeah.
Man hungry soccer boss.
At the end,
man.
Of course, the stadium won it. Well done, Jack. You ran away with it.
Yeah.
Right, I told you earlier we're going to try out a new feature. So this segment is called Moments in Time, and it's a celebration of some of those special moments that have shaped our listeners' lives. And I'm delighted that we're joined by listener Greg in Liverpool. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Great to have you on, Greg. How you doing? You having a good day?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well. Excited to share my tale.
So can we, just to kind of set the scene, can we cue some stirring music, please? Some stirring instrumental. Oh, listen to that. It's beautiful.
Friday, man.
The stereo music is gone. And Greg, when you're ready, please tell us your moment in time.
So my name's Greg Duncan, and I once saw Martin Keown at Oxford train station. Yeah, it's difficult to know where to begin, but I suppose I now, when I think about my life, I sort of think of it divided into two parts, sort of before Martin and after Martin. It really changed my life for the better and in so many ways. It was a clear spring day. I think it was about May, the sunlight dappling through Oxford train station roof, and just illuminating, you know, one of the most iconic faces in British football.
What kind of time period are we talking about? What year are we talking about here?
We're talking a few years ago, so I think 2017. You know, I was much more carefree and happier then, which I think is why I think back on that time so fondly. The way I recognised that it was him was because I recognised his voice from, you know, Match of the Day. Rather than seeing him first, I heard his dulcet tones across the station floor.
What did he say?
He was very intently giving his son instructions about how to catch a train. you know, so he's really explaining to him the point that he has to change. And I mean, this is a grown adult man who's receiving these instructions, who looked very, very much like he understood exactly what he had to do.
Did he buy anything from a vending machine or anything?
He didn't buy anything from a vending machine, but he was sporting a very delicious-looking pasty from an upper crust.
Oh.
They paired with what looked to be an artisan coffee. So they say never meet your heroes, and you know, I have a wonderful, lasting memory of Martin Keown.
They say never meet your heroes, and just to clarify, you did not meet Martin Keown. Yeah.
Buster can truth.
Never meet your heroes, so I didn't.
And that was Greg's moment in time. A fantastic moment in time.
I'm very pleased to hear it.
Next week on the podcast, we'll be reading Dean Windass's Dino with journalist and host of Not the Top 20 podcast, George Ellick. If you've read that or any book we've read, get in touch. Get in touch about anything, to be honest. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter at Footy Book Club, Instagram at Football Book Club, and we're on Facebook. And now you can also contact us on email, fbc@crowdnetwork.co.uk. Oh, that's exciting.
Oh, that's exciting. Woo!
Send us an email.
I'm going to send so many emails.
Please don't. any Andy Crab stories as well, send them right there if you don't want to show, you know, send them us on Twitter, send them us by email. Thanks a lot, everyone, for today. You've been brilliant. Really great. We'll see you all next week for the book. Any last words?
I have some last words.
Okay, that's very aggressively said. What are your last words?
Because I've had a message from someone who thinks that I was in the right about Mesut Ozil and Jose Mourinho, and I'm going to play it now in dramatic fashion at the end of the episode.
Wait. Context-wise, is it an Arsenal fan?
No.
Right. Let's hear him out. Okay. Let's hear him out.
Hi, Jack, mate. Just wanted to send you a note. I just checked out your podcast. Loving it. I've just heard my first episode, the Jose Mourinho one. Just wanted to send you a message saying, yeah, completely back you 100%. You're completely right about Jose. Everything you said is true. I don't know who this James guy is, but he's talking nonsense. Anyway, I thought I'd just send that to you, mate.
No. Take that.
What's his name?
I'm not giving you his name.
Well, I hope you enjoyed being cut on the podcast. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Daniels, and James Balgen. It was created by James Bug, and it was a crowd production. Thanks to Karen for writing the book, but where are they all now? Well, Karen Brady is now vice chair of West Ham after revolutionising Birmingham City, Kerrang, and, of course, Big Borsan. She's now married and has two children with Paul Pesci-Salido. Lovely. Barry Fry went on to marry Peterborough United, where he's still director of football to this day. Jose Dominguez has never forgiven him. David Gold and David Sullivan left Birmingham with Karen in 2007 to take over at West Ham. They didn't take the blind alcoholic on acid who designed the building with them. And the Sunday Sport continues to report credible and robust news stories to this day. The theme music, Hills Behind, is the work of Silent Partner and is used in the Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll be back next week with Dean Windass's Dino. Until then, see you soon.